Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia EV6. Inspire your senses. The fully electric EV6. Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. I'm Joe at RTE.ie. Mervyn Clendenning. Mervyn, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
And how are you 17 days after that horrific ordeal? How are you today?
Well, I was better 2 days ago, Joe, because I've been talking to people that was in the yard when the incident happened.
Yeah.
And I was unconscious, and it's frightening to hear what went on.
Well, tell us what you remember and then tell us what other people remember. It was 17 days ago, the 19th of August. What happened?
Yeah, it started from the start, Joe. Probably the best thing. Milking the cows, and the one evening it was 7 o'clock. Usually I'd have them out at 6:30. And Mervyn Waters, he's a neighbour, he's a contractor, he came to mix, agitate slurry for me in the milking parlour shed. And he put the agitator into the tank and he came up to me and he said to me, "You're late finishing this evening." And I said, "I am." And he said to me, "Sure, I'll wait till you get the last row of cows out."
Okay.
So we done that. I went back into the pit of the parlour and was walking up it. And I got the fumes all right, but not bad now at that stage. And I went up to the front of it, and it was a lot worse. So I said to the man that was with me in the pit, milking them with me, I said, "Here, we better get out of here. This isn't good.
I never
experienced anything like that, and I'm farming all my life."
Okay.
So I stepped up the 4 steps to get out of the milking parlour. And at that, I thought of the 6 cows, of course, naturally enough. I went back. I said I'd better go back down and turn on the gate to let the cows out.
Okay.
But while I was at the top, it just took me like a split second. I remember, Joe, catching on to a bar, and I fell, 4 foot down into the pit, and I split my head down on the steps of the milking parlour where you get down into it. And at that stage, the man that was in the parlour started calling for help. He called Mervyn Waters, and he was at the far end of the shed, which he couldn't hear me. He had the tractor running, but he hadn't it mixing.
Okay.
So he ran up the yard to where my wife, and she works with the HSE, and she was just home from work.
Yeah.
And he called her, and she came down the yard, and she said, "There's something serious wrong, all right, I'll ring 999. She rang for an ambulance, and at the meantime, Mervyn Waters had seen that there was something wrong, and he came up and he seen me lying in the bottom of the pit, unconscious. He actually thought I had taken a heart attack.
Okay.
So he ran back down to get his phone on the tractor, and in the meantime, my good wife, Iris, she arrived, and she had just dialed 999 and had all done when, bang, she collapsed. She didn't actually know we were mixing slurry.
Yeah.
At all. She walked into it with her, not knowing that we were at it.
Wow.
So when Mervyn came back, we were only talking, Joe, in seconds now, seconds. I'd say 10 seconds is all we're talking about, or 15. Not only was I laying palmed out in the parlour, it's all right to laugh now, it's no joke. She was unconscious as well, Iris.
Good God.
Below in the bottom of it. Not in a pit in the milking parlour, like it's where you...
Yeah, but it's from the methane that was coming off the slurry gas.
It had knocked me out I thought actually that there was a blue smoke. I said to myself, "That's funny, look at the blue smoke." And I had a load of meal, I think, ordered. And I said to myself, "Wouldn't you think the lorry driver would have turned exhaust away from the shed out into the field? Because the bin is beside the butcher. There's no smell or... You can't see it or feel it. The methane gas is odourless."
Yeah.
And it was an illusion I had. And the doctor told me in Mullingar, people get an illusion if you're close to death. No, that's what I was told.
Wow.
I'm not a doctor or far, far from it.
So yourself and your wife are now unconscious on the floor.
Correct. Two of us were lying in the bottom of the meat, not knowing, obviously, that we were where we were. So Mervyn Water, he's a big man. he pulls tug of war and he's into all that, and he lifted me wife up and put her on the passage where the cows stand, and he dragged her out, and he said, "I'll get Iris out first, because the other man, I fear that there's something seriously wrong with him. He thought I was dead." So he came, he came back down. We're only talking, as I said to you, in 5-10 seconds in this. And he came down and he lifted me, and I'm 95 kilos, and he failed to get me lifted. So he got under me again and he lifted me, and there was blood coming out everywhere where I had got a bang on the head, and I had 14 stitches in the back of my head. So he lifted me, and he couldn't get me up the steps. And at that stage, my good daughter, she's married in Roscommon, Jacqueline, she arrived home. She was over for the evening.
Yeah.
And she came on top of all this. That was a good mess to come in on top of.
Your mum and your dad,
yes. She caught me by the arm, Joe, as well as Mervyn. And she said to Mervyn, "I'll break his arm, I can't pull it much." And she's only after having a baby 6 or 8 weeks ago. He said, "It doesn't matter if you break his arm, he has to be got out of here." So they pulled me out anyway, Joe, and they brought me outside. And at that stage, they had been working on Iris, and she was in a mess. She had convulsions and everything.
It's incredible.
So I don't know how long it is. Like, I wouldn't be able to tell you how long it is, Joe, but the next thing is I woke up. And the first person I seen was my sister-in-law, Iris's sister, Pearl, and her husband. And I knew that Iris, I could hear the paramedics working on her, and they were using codes, what they use for.
Yeah.
And that's when I got scary. I knew, it says, Iris is in bother here. So the ambulance that Iris rang for to bring me brought her away first, and another one came for me, and the paramedics were absolutely wonderful. Now, they couldn't have done more or helped out more. So Iris was removed to Mullingar there and then.
Yeah.
And she was with tubes into her, and she had a tube down into her lungs. And she was in an induced coma, and she was put on oxygen. And the next thing is I was coming to at that stage now. I knew I could see the blood on my hands, but that was the least of my worries, I knew. But I didn't realise, Joe, that Iris was as bad till the neighbours were just telling me a couple of days ago about, they actually thought that Iris was dead, that there was that, it was a waste bringing her in the ambulance. And that's not a nice thing to say. It. I don't mean in a bad way.
Yeah,
but
no, not
absolutely shocked.
God.
Because one of the men that was there was a male nurse in Dublin, and a Mahon chap beside us. And he said to his mother and father when he went over, "I think Mervyn is probably Mervyn," but he said, "You don't want to hear about Iris."
Good.
It was frightening,
God.
Joe.
Good God. And then take up the happenings from the people you've been talking to over the last few days, Mervyn. That, I say, frightened you even more. What were they witnessing? They thought the two of you were gone, did they?
Sorry, Joe, your line is now. Yes?
They thought that, take up the picture, tell me the story from the perspective of you're unconscious and Iris is unconscious. Tell me what the people around you, what they now tell you they saw, they witnessed, and what were they thinking?
Oh, they were thinking, Joe, very poorly of Iris.
Yeah.
They were. I was going in and out of consciousness, Joe. So I'm not a doctor or far from it, but I don't know whether it was the methane gas had me knocked out, Joe, or the bang I got on the back of the head.
Right.
But I woke up outside the milking parlour at the dairy door. And Iris never woke. She didn't remember anything for a day and a half, 2 days.
Just incredible, the speed of it. Okay, you regain consciousness before the ambulance that Iris called for you has now taken Iris away, and everyone is worried to bits about the condition. Obviously, she was a priority at that stage. She was forced to go in the ambulance. And then did you regain consciousness in the farmyard?
I did, Joe.
Good man.
Correct.
Yeah, good.
I did. And I knew everybody that was there. And it was actually, they tell me, I was calling for John Waters. He's Mervyn's father. I was saying, where is John Waters? Should be here. And then his good wife said to me, they were all there. That, no, she says, sure, John was in hospital as well. So there was absolutely no way he was going to be there. But I don't know why he came into my head anyway. Okay. And I was calling for him. I said, John Waters, was he here?
And you're taken away in the ambulance.
Taken away in the ambulance up to Mullingar. Was sick on the way up. I was a mess. Yeah. Went up into hospital, Joe. This is into the ward.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed in the bed opposite me, I said to myself, that person isn't well in that bed. There's a sight of doctors and nurses around her. Around this. I didn't know if there was a man or a woman at that
time. Okay.
And I said, they're very, very active around her. And so was my good wife, as herself.
Good God.
And she was on her way up to intensive care at that stage.
Wow.
And there was panic, Joe, and I mean panic. That's when I realised, but I didn't still realise she was as bad as she was. The men told me, and women in the yard, like how she was.
Yeah.
But she was in the ward opposite me. Two of us were in the one ward.
In the bed opposite. So Iris is now taken up to ICU, and are you gradually regaining your senses?
Oh, I was brought up to theatre then, Joe, and I was stitched.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, I was brought to the X-ray unit because I had hurt my hip. I was complaining of a pain in my hip. But there was nothing showed up in my hip. And I was stitched in theatre.
Yeah. And how long were you in hospital for, Mervyn?
Well, Joe, I got pains in my chest and I think I fell going down. On my way down, I must have damaged my chest and they were afraid that I'd have a heart problem. So I was sent to the Maher Hospital.
Okay.
I was in hospital, Joe, for a week. Iris was in it for 5 days. I was in it actually longer.
Longer, okay.
Yeah, well,
but Iris, who was at death's door, was home within 5 days. That's incredible.
Correct.
Isn't that incredible?
Correct, sure. Correct.
Wow.
No, she's a tough woman and she's a strong woman, but she's not any tougher than anyone else.
And why the other Mervyn Waters?
Yes, he was... When all was over, Joe, when we were all brought away, the poor man was getting flashbacks immediately. He still has it, and that's a fortnight, Joe, since it happened. Because he's full of life, and I was only talking to him along with a good friend of his, Pat Campbell, 2 days ago, and they'd be all, don't you know the crack that goes on with men and having the slag, but there was none of that with him.
And
he's
how
getting trauma.
But Mervyn was lucky. Mervyn Waters was lucky. He didn't collapse, surely.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, no, it must have been... We reckon it must have been gone, Joe, at that stage. That, like, okay. The doors... Like, he hadn't started to mix. They couldn't... I don't understand it, but... Well, I do understand it now. That is a serious problem. But, no, he had no... He had no issues, and he was brought up to Mullingar. He was brought up that night. He went up after to make sure that everything was all right, and at 2 o'clock he was sent home.
It's just the speed of when the methane from the slurry. And you were conscious. You knew beforehand, Mervyn, how dangerous it was, and you were being protective because the farmer who was coming to help you said, "Listen, we'd wait a few minutes. Go in."
Yes,
and,
yes, so exactly. You knew, all in a nutshell.
Yeah. But still, it happened before it was even agitated.
It happened because I have pipes in the bottom of the milking parlour to take away the washings from the milk, from the dairy and from where you stand milking the cows. And we reckon that, and that's diverted into the tank, and we reckon it must have come out under the crust of the slurry and up these pipes and came out at the front.
Sure.
Now, I'm not an expert, but that's what they tell me must have happened.
Okay. By the way, did the cattle get out?
They were still there, Joe. I think, Trevor, only for my own family, they were absolutely brilliant. Jacqueline and Anika, two daughters and their husbands, and Trevor and Jason are two sons. And Trevor let the cows out at 12 o'clock, Joe, I think, that night, or 11. There wasn't a bother on them.
Incredible.
The ones that I was worried about, that I turned to.
And have there been stories of, was it 1 in 10 fatalities, 10% of farming fatalities, farming accident fatalities, are caused by slurry? But does slurry kill animals the same way?
Well, most certainly does, Joe.
Does it?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, most certainly, yes. So that's why you're being advised, everyone is advised, like, to have absolutely no cattle or dog or anything in the. I heard someone saying only lately about they were agitating, and maybe I shouldn't be saying, but there were rats in the and the dead stone dead, they dropped dead in the shed with the
Well, God, whoever between Mervyn Waters, the other people who came to your aid, your daughter arriving fortuitously.
And saying,
I'll break Daddy's arm the way I'm pulling him, and Mervyn saying, don't matter one bit about
his arm.
Get him out of there.
Shoulder, he said to
get him out of there.
Yes.
Wow.
Your son. It shows you what it like. Well, when it kills cattle, it surely kill a human, Joe.
And it has.
Ratio of the weight.
And it has.
You
as
know,
you know,
you're talking about a 600-kilo cow compared to 100
true.
Kilos.
Good point.
There
have been so many family tragedies.
Oh yeah,
where family members went in to rescue other family members, and they too.
Up in the north, Joe.
That's right, the rugby family.
And the father.
They perished.
Dreadful.
Oh, one of the worst.
And they were experienced. Like, they were top of the range farmers. Obviously they didn't take precautions enough, but they would have been very, very wary of these problems.
Your son Trevor is on the line. Trevor Clendenning. Trevor, good afternoon. Is it hydrogen sulfide that comes off? But anyway, Trevor, what are your memories of 2 weeks ago?
Yeah. Oh, well, Joe, like, I suppose I was there, we'll say, 40 minutes beforehand, and I said to my dad, listen, it was my turn to put the kids to bed, so I said, I'll stay for an hour and give you a hand. And he's like, will you come over Saturday morning? I need you to help me on Saturday morning. I said, right, so I'll go home. And I was just putting two sons to bed when my sister rang, and she kind of didn't know what happened. So she rang and said, oh, were you talking to Mum and Dad? I said, yeah, they were fine, they were in grand form. She said, oh, something happened, I'm going over to the farm. So I said, okay, sure, listen, ring me later on and let me know, make sure that everything is all right. Because I didn't, to be honest with you, what happened was the last thing that I was expecting to happen. So I just said to her, listen, ring me later on, you know, if everything's okay. Got nothing more than a minute or two later, my other sister rang, Jacqueline, and she could barely speak. So at that stage, I just got into the car and came straight over the farm, because I knew there was something more serious than Anika had known at the time. So, when I got there, I suppose it was 7:45. The ambulance had just arrived, and Mum and Dad were lying out in the middle of the yard.
Wow.
So it was just such a shock to get at the time. Like, you know, from 40 minutes ago, seeing Dad well and happy, and, you know, talking about what we had to do, and then a football match the weekend, like, talking just normal, and then all of a sudden to see the two of them, Mum wasn't responsive at all.
And what were you thinking had happened? Did you have any?
All I know is my sister had said something about slurry when I was coming on the way over. So I didn't know exactly what happened until I got there, and the ambulance kind of guys told me what happened. And you're like, it's just such a shock. And I suppose now you just think how lucky that we are actually able to tell the story.
Yeah.
You know, which it's a bad news story that actually had a very good ending for once.
Yeah. And it's your father is just and your mother as well, magnificent in terms of being here today, but also magnificent.
Exactly. Sorry for interrupting you, Joe. See, Trevor knows more about what Joe, the actual in the yard, because, like, I was unconscious and I was unconscious.
Yeah.
I was in and out of consciousness. So I'll put you back to Trevor, Joe.
Okay, thanks. Trevor, so you see the two. Did you know it was the hydrogen sulfur? It's from the slurry. Did you know what had happened?
Well, just from what the ambulance phone, but I didn't think, you know, what happened could happen to two people. And, yeah. you know, and it was my Uncle Stuart, I don't know how he, did nothing happen to him or Mervyn that helped my dad. Like, it's just, it was just such a shock at the time. And, you know, you're trying to be there for mum and dad to try and keep them conscious or try and talk. But, like, my two sisters were with my mum, and she was not responsive at all. So at least dad kind of was able to talk, and he had kind of an idea of what we had spoke about earlier on, but now he was far from being, you know, in any way in good health. But it was a massive shock for everyone, and there's so many neighbours around at the time that came down, and they all they wanted came down to do was to see, is there any way that they could help or see?
Yeah,
you know, there was nobody coming down to see, oh God, look what happened, I can go and tell somebody. It was all, how can we help or make sure that everything is okay, or that we can help any way possible.
The family you were referring to there, Mervyn, was Nevin, who was the rugby player, Noel, and his father, Nevin, and his brother Graham,
right,
Spence, and his
Spence from
the north.
That's right, Joe.
Yeah, I wonder why did any reason why Iris took it so badly, so to speak.
That's a good question, Joe. A very good question. I honestly do not know. Maybe.
I don't know. She would have been worked up anyway after seeing Dad maybe. And, you know, her breathing mightn't have been as, she probably could be breathing heavily at the time anyway. It's very hard to know how it hit her so bad and so
quick. Trevor, Mam doesn't remember anything about it either, Joe.
Does she not know?
No, not really.
And can you get a smoke alarm, a smell alarm, a carbon?
A man mentioned that to me, Joe, and I honestly don't know. I presume there is, Joe. I presume there is.
Well, there's
but we have done that for the last, since it was built 8 or 10 years ago, the shed, and we never had a problem. Well, of course, we wouldn't be in it as much, but...
And apparently hydrogen sulfide, which is what knocked you out, it has a rotten egg smell at low levels, but cannot be smelt at higher levels.
Yeah, that's the methane gas.
Yeah,
yes.
And that's what knocks people out. Wow.
Yeah.
It's
odourless and
Mervyn, Andy, Trevor, but Mervyn, what is your message to other farmers? You must have a...
Joe, don't be next near or about it when the man comes to mix it anyway.
Yeah.
Because this really did put me to thinking, like, maybe we were laxed up to now, but by God, Joe, it's changed my whole attitude towards mixing slurry anyway.
You don't sound like you're lax. You sound like you're a good farmer and busy, like most.
Well, I'd be as careful as anyone else now, Joe, and I'd have everything kind of right. Maybe everything wouldn't be totally right, but it'd be in that end of it anyway, Joe, because there's so many accidents between people falling into tanks and this thing with the gas. Yeah. So,
and then people are reminding me on 51551, the text number, that Noel Tierney has been talking previously about his son Fergal, who died trying to rescue him from this.
Good man, Joe. Yeah. I seen the documentary about it.
Yeah.
Noel Tierney from Galway, the great footballer.
That
was only on about a year ago, or 6 or 8 months ago. Yes.
And Mervyn, how's life been on? Have you generally been accident free on a farm? I know it's a very busy occupation and lots of machinery.
Maybe bits of cuts, Joe, now, don't you?
But what would you worry of a day? What would you worry about most? Would it be the PTO? Would it have been the tractor overturning? What would worry you most of a day on a farm?
What would worry me most, Joe, is I have 8 wonderful little grandchildren. The best that ever walked on the planet. We all think our own are the best anyway.
Yeah.
Only natural.
I'm sure
but
they are, yeah.
The one fear I have, Joe, and the one fear I'd love you to highlight, Joe, is... that where the agitator is put into the tanks, the manholes, Joe.
Yeah, okay.
There has to be... If you haven't the right manhole, you should be fine.
Yeah. And you have to...
I spent 5,500 euro and no grants. I didn't want a grant on putting manholes in, proper ones. That's recommended by Chagas and by the department and by everyone. That's the one. I had a bigger fear of it, Joe, than I had of the gas coming off it now, because I didn't actually know the gas was as dangerous as it was.
And you were thinking,
but the manholes is the big is the one. Like, they want to be, in my opinion, every farm should be checked. Every farm should be checked for that, because it's a dread.
It's a jaw-dropping story, Mervyn.
Even when the man is agitating, I do get weak.
Yeah. How's Iris now, by the way?
She's recovering slowly, Joe.
Okay.
She's recovering slowly, very slowly. Her ribs are at her and her chest, but with God's help, she'll be all right. She will be all right.
And all of
them. Because I asked one of the nurses in the hospital when I knew it was my wife then, and I said to the nurse, I said, "And how was Iris?" And she said, "Iris is in good hands," which she was in Mullingar Hospital. There couldn't have been more.
Brilliant.
They don't be half paid, Joe, and that is a fact. The nurses and doctors, they were absolutely brilliant.
And where does Iris work in the HSE?
She used to be in Mullingar, and she's she'd just be around from different place to different place.
Let me bring the nurse
came back, and she said to me, "With God's help," and I heard that. I said, "This is good."
Oh my God, Kevin Dunleavy is listening on 1850 715 815. Kevin, you worked.
Hello, Joe.
Your experience with hydrogen sulfide.
Yeah, I worked in gas plants in the Middle East, and anywhere where there was a trace of hydrogen sulfide H2S gas, we had to wear monitors, or there were monitors throughout the gas plants.
Okay.
But they're just a simple clip-on monitor that you can wear on your just clip onto your pocket, and they'll save your life.
Okay. It's oil and gas is a dangerous industry.
Yeah, well, it comes from the same source from fossil fuels. As you said, you can smell H2S at very low levels, but that's the time to get out. You know, H2S gas and a slurry tank that's being agitated is a very concentrated amount of H2S in there, you know.
And look how quickly it overcame Iris.
One breath. We got a lot of training.
One breath.
One breath is all it takes when it's in high levels, and then you're unconscious.
Wow, Mervyn.
You will not smell it.
That's enough.
Yeah. Wow.
That's why my wife was...
One breath.
Yeah, one breath is. We would never be allowed to go in and say, try, if somebody had fallen, we saw them falling in the distance, you would never be allowed to go in and save them without putting on a breathing apparatus.
One single breath of that hydrogen sulfide.
Yeah, I knew when I took the breath, when I came up the table.
Bang.
I was out in a minute, second.
And how's the wound on the head, Mervyn?
The wound is all right, sure.
How's the head?
The wound was all right. I got bandaged the wound on the head. Wouldn't be a lot inside it anyway, Joe. So.
Will you stop?
Wouldn't really matter.
Okay.
The wound is all right, Joe.
Okay. There is a monitor you can buy called a H2S monitor.
Actually just looked it up as you were having a conversation with Mervyn. And there are little monitors you can buy. You just Google H2S monitor. I don't know how much they are.
Okay.
But if it saves your life, it doesn't matter.
It wouldn't really matter what is the cause of it. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, it's Kevin Dunleavy. Thanks indeed for that. Trevor Clendenning, I hope your mother makes a full recovery. Thanks,
Kevin. Trevor,
I hope your mother makes a full recovery your father.
In time.
Okay, and Mervyn, you look after yourself. You've educated a lot of people today, I think, Mervyn.
It was scary, but as I said to you, Joe, it's more scary now when I hear neighbours that was there. I asked them. I said, "Just tell me what went on," because I knew it was going to be. And they were telling me like they were scared out of their brains when they seen Iris. I wasn't too bad, Joe.
Yeah.
I was, as I said to you, the first person that when I woke up with my sister-in-law from Keena, Pearl and Edwin Jones, but. When they tell me the state Iris was in,
you were
Just as well I was out because I wouldn't be able for that.
Say what is Mervyn. Thomas Roach is in Kildare. Now, it was the shaft of a slurry power agitator. Was that it, Thomas?
It was, yeah. I was agitating slurry and there was no cover on the shaft. Now, it was completely illegal now to operate one with no cover. But all of a sudden I realised the T-shirt was gone off my body.
Wow.
And it was wrapped around the power shaft, and I only had a string around both arms and around the neck.
Good God.
And that evening I was clearing out the back of the slurry because it used to open up from the back. And I noticed the chest a bit sore, and I examined it anyway, and I realised it was bruised. So I went to Danny O'Neill and Michael the next day, and I had cracked ribs, so I was plastered up for a while, actually. I cracked ribs, so it was a very close call.
And did you?
That was a close call, Thomas. Yes,
it sure was. And Thomas, like you were wearing a T-shirt.
I was wearing a T-shirt, and lucky enough, it was an old T-shirt that tore off the body, and I was left with just three strings, two around the arm and one around the neck, the hems, you know, and the T-shirt was around the shaft. Yeah.
And did you?
You were a lucky man, Thomas.
I sure was, wasn't he, Mervyn?
Yeah, I cracked ribs. That was the only injury.
And what did you?
Well, I had a wonderful good friend, a gentleman, John Twaddle, worked with machinery all his life from when he was able to walk, and unfortunately wasn't able to tell the tale. He was bailing hay and he got caught in the shaft.
Oh.
And the poor man succumbed to it in Mullingar Hospital after. It was a week. The poor man,
and he was working
with machinery. He would be looked up to in the area as being a very good man and all. And
God rest him. Yeah. And Thomas, did you feel anything?
I didn't feel anything. I just realised the T-shirt was gone.
Complete. You're saying that all that was left on your top part of your body. Within a millisecond was the hem around your neck of the T-shirt.
The hem and the hem of the two sleeves around each arm, yeah.
And what did you think had happened to you?
Well, I realised what happened then.
You were lucky it ripped for you.
Oh, yeah, it was an old T-shirt, lucky enough.
I had another old
T-shirt on the tractor, so I walked away until evening. And it was in the evening I realised that the chest was sore when it was bending down, you know.
Hang on. Your T-shirt disappears.
Disappeared around the shaft, yeah.
And you kept working?
I kept working, yeah. I walked away for the evening, yeah.
Oh my God.
You were one of the lucky ones,
yeah,
Thomas.
One of the lucky ones, Thomas.
Well, it's a good few years ago. Like
I know, but good man. And did you, by the way, when you realised that your ribs were bruised and you realised what could have happened, surely you reached for a strong cup of tea, Thomas, or something?
No, I didn't. I walked away until late that evening. I walked away at the slurry. So until near dark that evening, actually.
Okay. And are you still farming, Thomas?
No, I retired from farming 21 years ago.
Good man. And did you ever have any other accidents on the farm that we can warn people about?
I had stitches from injuries. I walked into a front end loader, the spike of the front end loader, and I had to get stitched on the forehead. Lucky enough, it didn't go into the eye, you know.
Just one of the most dangerous occupations going farming.
I know that. And you're the hardest workers going as well in terms of 7 days a week, 365 cows have to be milked. They don't go on holidays.
It's a good life all the same.
Is it? Yeah.
Well, the problem is too with farmers, it's a one-man show really, you know.
Yeah.
And things have to be done when the weather's right to do it, you know.
Yeah, you've no choice. You can't say
a bit of rushing and going. I'm a good hand at that myself, rushing.
And Thomas, who did you say you went to see?
Danny O'Neill and Michael.
And who's he?
He's one of the best bone sayers in Ireland.
Okay.
He has retired now because he's six or seven now at the moment.
And what did Danny O'Neill of Michael do for you?
He done nothing, only put plasters on it and just told me to take it easy for few days.
And did he do any foostering or manoeuvring?
No, they were only cracked. They weren't moved out of position.
Oh, fair play.
You were lucky, Thomas.
Oh, Thomas, you were lucky.
But some years before that, my father had a lucky escape too. He was grinding corn with a tractor, with a belt on the tractor into the grinder.
Yeah.
And the tractor wasn't totally out of the shed with the exhaust. the fumes built up anyway, and all of a sudden my mother was crossing the yard and she saw him staggering out of the shed, and she pulled him out anyway. He was overcome with the gas of the tractor. The fumes of the tractor can do you as well.
Of course, of course. Okay, Thomas, God bless you. I hope you're enjoying your retirement. Are you well deserved?
Yeah, I'm still doing a bit of and when work you, here and there. Like,
and when you said it was, you were glad it was an old T-shirt, what you meant was that it was frayed and it would have maybe was torn in a few little places, and that helped it whip it off your body rather than whipping you onto the shaft.
Oh, yeah, if it had been a good T-shirt, I was gone, you know.
Okay.
I would have found lapped around the power drive.
Don't think about it. Do you hear me?
And the only time it would stop when the tractor run out with diesel.
Don't think about it. Let it be a warning to other people. Thomas, good man. Mervyn.
Yes, Joe.
I'm looking at your photograph there in the Longford Leader. Would you? You're not going to retire, are you? You're a young man.
Well, I'm not a young man, but
You're a granddad, but you look fine and healthy.
I'm healthy anyway. I wouldn't say fine, Joe, now, wouldn't we?
Okay.
I know.
Well, you're fine now and glad to be alive.
Yeah, well, only for my family, Joe. They really, that's when you know, and your neighbours. That's really, Joe, the whole lot about, you know, your friends.
Okay.
Bringing in.
A speedy recovery to Iris now. Are you fully recovered, do you think, Mary?
I'm fully recovered. Well,
apart from
the
psychological aspect of it.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, will you mind yourself? Did you get a break this summer? Did you have a staycation?
Oh, I did, Joe. We were over in Darren Islands.
Good.
I think we're going for a weekend now down to Enniscrowan. Lovely. Lego a bit of a boost.
Remember,
Enniscrowan, a lovely part of the country.
And when you get into those seaweed baths and give yourself a treat, will you? And a nice warm bath as well.
I'll think of you, Joe.
Think of something more attractive to me, Mervyn, when you're in the bath. Mervyn Clendenning, and what a fantastic name, by the way, Mervyn.
That's an unusual name. Yeah, there's not too many of it in there. I have a cousin beside me here in Longford.
And where does Clendenning come from?
I think, Joe, originally it was from Scotland, but that's come back generations now because my father was reared here in Longford, and my grandfather moved from Gown in Cavan to Longford. So after that, I don't know, Joe. But I think it's Scottish.
Well, there's so many Clendennings in the phone book.
There's a cousin lives beside me, David, and I have an uncle in Borovet, Sam Glendenning.
Well, by the way, long may you continue insofar as we have phone books. Long may the Clendenning name with Mervyn and Iris before it continue to be in the phone book. Do you hear me? By the way, the ploughing is gone again.
It's called off.
Yeah.
Pity.
That's a great
one thing I used to love going to.
I used to love going to it.
It was wonderful. And Marie McHugh and all that. She was a wonderful lady.
And a great atmosphere. I think I went, well, I was working, but I went 20 years in a row until it was cancelled there 2 years, last year.
It was very handy for us in the Midlands,
Carlow
and around there.
Yeah. Mervyn, enjoy your little break in Enniscrowan with Iris. And
I most certainly will, Joe.
Okay. I'll bring in Dan. Mervyn, you're working today on the farm.
I'm doing a bit, Joe. Doing a small bit.
Okay. That's Mervyn Clendenning. Thanks. God bless you, Mervyn, you and your family, and Mervyn Waters as well, and all the paramedics and the HSE staff who did such a wonderful job in Mullingar. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia eSoul with a range up to 452 kilometres.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at RTE.ie. Dan Murphy, you were 16. What happened?
Joe,
how are you?
If the tractor didn't get me, my wife will now.
Okay, off you go. Off you go.
I was working with a maid, and they had what they call a live drive, so the power drive never got turned off on them. Okay.
Now it's not the tractor getting you; it's the line, unfortunately, getting you. We try and fix that phone line. Don't go away, Dan. Stay there. Ronan Boyle from Easy Fix Rubber Products in Ballinasloe. What can you do in terms of this horrific danger that slurry represents?
Joe, well, good afternoon, and thanks for taking our call.
Yeah, thanks for making the call. Yeah,
we're based in Ballinasloe, and we have we supply a large range of products already into the agricultural markets throughout the world. And one of the products we supply is a slurry technology system, which basically treats or aerates the manure while it's in storage. And through the treatment of the manure, you eliminate the need of mechanical agitation by tractor.
Okay.
And you prevent a crust forming then on the top of the slurry. So when you're extracting slurry with your tanker to spread it, you don't have any dangerous gases like hydrogen sulfide or nitrous oxide being released in quantities that are harmful to both man and animals. So you eliminate the need to remove animals from the shed, and it's safe for people to operate within the area as well. And I think what's important to note is, I think between 2008 and 2017, 10% of farm deaths were attributed to accidents related to slurry through release of gases like hydrogen
and
sulfide.
And it gets worse for child deaths on farms. It's 20% caused by slurry.
Absolutely.
Wow. Say there, Ronan. You know, I want to go and bring in JJ O'Brien is in Limerick. JJ, the gas detector was mentioned by Kevin Dunleavy from the Middle East, but you can get them in Ireland. Tell us.
Hi, Joe. JJ O'Brien here from OBW Technologies in Limerick. I suppose for many years we've been specializing in gas detection equipment, and you can buy a little simple device that you basically clip onto your shirt top pocket area. And if it goes, we'll say basically, if it long before it gets into dangerous levels, it will alarm. You'll get a visual, a sounder, and a vibration to tell you that's basically to leave the area. But we have tried on numerous occasions before, because actually from a farming background as well myself, so I would have had an experience of agitating slurry in the past and spreading slurry and everything as well. And I suppose we've tried to promote this in the past, even along with others at the time. And I suppose, look, in all honesty, farmers just never really took it seriously. Yeah. Or else they wouldn't kind of, you know, at the time they were saying, geez, that's very expensive.
Do you sell many of your detectors?
We sell thousands of detectors every year. But we'll say when it comes to the farming community, we wouldn't hardly sell 100 a year. And basically, again, it's just, you know, I don't know, the awareness is definitely there because everybody in farming knows of somebody who did die, we'll say, or was injured as a result of, you know, exposure to slurry gases. The dangerous gas is hydrogen sulfide. It's a heavy gas. It builds like water from the ground upwards. And when you are agitating slurry, we'll say that's when you're going to upset this gas and release it from the product. And to buy a gas monitor, we'll say the list price on the monitors is €170. But we actually have done a promotion on them in the past, and we'd be willing to do it again. We'll say they're working out at €125 plus the VAT each, we'll say.
Okay.
So it's a very affordable device, we'll say, to make sure that you will be...
And you clip it on?
You clip it on, and once you turn on this device, and once you turn it on, it remains switched on for 2 years. There's no recharging of battery or anything like that. You just switch it on,
How does it tell me I'm in the danger zone?
Well, basically, it alarms at the HSA guideline levels of 5 ppm, that's 5 parts per million, and 10 parts per million. And if it reaches those levels, then what you will, it'll basically alarm, we'll say, so you get your low-level alarm or your high-level alarm. Now, the way the HSA actually monitor it,
the Health and Safety Authority,
They look at the 15-minute exposure or your 8-hour exposure. So even though that you're in an environment and we'll say it's not going to alarm instantly, that it's not danger, that there is no instant danger on it, over time it's still not good for your health to be exposed to it. So that's how they measure the gases. So you'll have a low-level alarm and a high-level alarm, we'll say, for personal safety without getting into it in too much detail.
Now,
and the whole thing is, when it alarms, get out of the environment. And if it alarms as you're heading into the environment, turn around and walk out.
Okay. Now, just briefly, like in some people... thrown off the smoke alarm because it's annoying them all the time. It's going, does that happen with this? Do you follow me?
It does. Yeah. It happens, we'll say, we're a very well-known contractor in Ireland who's often on the front page of the journal, usually, we'll say, once a year, said to me at one stage he didn't realise how dangerous gas was or the slurry was until he got the gas monitors because, yes, it was alarming a lot.
Okay.
Okay. So, you know, and they would have been doing it on contract.
Okay, how do people get these alarms? Are you online? I presume you are online.
We're online. If you go to obw.ie.
obw.ie.
Yeah. Okay. You'll be able to make contact with us, www.obw.ie, and we can send them out in the post. They would have been available in different co-op shops and things like that in the past, but again, there just was no real uptake of them, you know.
Well, then we're going to put you on the spot now. Will you send one on our behalf to Iris and Mervyn if we give you the address after the broadcast? Thanks very much.
Thing is, you asked nicely.
Okay, no, I think it's fantastic, and we have to do our little bit to remind people of, as Mervyn did so powerfully, of the one breath, and he was gone. JJ O'Brien, thanks indeed. Ronan by the stand, thanks indeed, Ronan from Easy Fix. Dan Rubber Products. Dan Murphy, are you back on a better line, I hope?
I am back, Joe.
You were 16, yep. What happened?
I was standing beside the tractor putting on a trailer, and the power drive was running. That was in what they was called an old major tractor, and the power drive was continuously running on those, and it stuck in my overall, and it stripped the overall off me completely. And
wow.
Looking off, I was only 16. I was able to I was able to put my arms behind my back, and I heard the whole thing tearing off me, and fortunately my limbs did survive that. But it was the best education I ever got.
Did you
as a young farmer? Anyway.
And what did you do as the clothes were ripped? Did you run to your parents or?
No, there was no running to parents.
Okay.
I suffered the consequences from my.
Oh, you did.
If I'd done that, I'd have been disinherited, Joe.
You did. You didn't tell them.
Not at all. How could I tell them?
But you're in your Jay's fluid. You're in your nudes. It's not funny.
It's not funny. I was lucky. But you didn't.
Why didn't you tell your parents? You've just nearly killed yourself.
Not at all. I was so lucky to survive and so happy to be standing at the end of it. I walked away a very happy man.
A very happy boy. You're only 16.
That's right. Yeah, a lot has happened since. But I think, Joy, it's great that you're highlighting this now. Farming is still dangerous. But everybody who's manufacturing machinery particularly have done an awful lot to make it
safer. The covers and the PTOs and everything.
But still,
it's a busy, dangerous. Because you're around machinery and animals and chemicals and byproducts of slurry. Hydrogen sulfide. It's a very well done, Dan. Yep. Well done. And by the way,
I think Joe, the bull is still the number one enemy.
Is he? Yeah.
The bull is still the most.
Why?
Because the bull will get you when you're least expecting it, and that's fact. You know, you know you're working with danger when you're working with tractors and power takeoffs and all these guys, but you never know with bull. They are the thing to watch.
Wow.
That's my opinion of it anyway.
Yeah, well, that's not the great story. The two lads were thinking of running across a field.
Yes.
And the farmer said, don't run across that field. And one of them says, well, could we not run fast? He said, the bull will get you.
The bull will get you.
And one of the lads said, well, I'm going because I can run faster than the fellow with me. But that's how dangerous that bull
that's
is.
That's exactly how it is. Yes.
Okay. Have you ever had an incident with a bull?
I've had an incident with a bull, and my worst incident was with a suckler cow. So I work part time and came from work one evening and went in to check a calf and was attacked by a cow, and I was very lucky to survive that. I jumped into a feeder out of the way, what they call a round feeder. So I jumped into the round feeder and waited for the cow to get back to her calf. And went about my business pretty lively, then, I can tell you.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you know, when you said to me at the start of the call, Dan, that your wife would give out to you, why?
Because I never told her either, for God's sake.
You never told her that this happened to you? Oh, for God's sake. And how long are you married?
Oh, 38 years.
Oh, you took your time, Dan.
I might tell her this evening.
Is there any other secrets in there? Okay, good man.
I was on the radio. I'll say I told Joe first.
Told Joe, yeah. And sure, no one, it was just me and you. Sure, no one heard.
Exactly.
Will you mind yourself, Dan?
I will, of course.
Okay, yeah. Good man.
Pleasure, Joe.
Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
We're talking about farm accidents because we were talking at the start of the programme with Mervyn Clendenning, who 2 weeks ago was walking basically past the slurry pit down to milk the cows, and in one breath, he collapsed with the odour, the gas that comes off the slurry, hydrogen sulfide. And that brought him down the steps into the milking pit, so to speak, and he smashed his head. He was unconscious. His wife runs to help, and she collapses. Anyway, both of them are survived, thank God, thank God. Now, Paul, what happened in relation to a slurry tank in your family, Paul?
Yeah, well, my daughter was had a job with this man. He had rented out a farmyard from somebody, and an elderly gentleman who was sort of caretaker in the place, the people who owned it, seemed they were retired, were showing her around.
Mm-hmm.
And they were walking around one of these slatted units
together,
and she suddenly disappeared.
Wow.
And she went down through a manhole into about 6 feet of slurry.
God.
And she didn't know
What had happened.
She said she saw her whole life sort of flashing in front of her in slow motion, and then to try and find out, which way am I? Am I upside down or downside up?
Oh my God.
And eventually she got the sense, okay, like, put your hands over your head.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other man then suddenly just grabbed her wrist and pulled her up. Now, the point I was making was that the manhole she fell down through had no cover on it, but later on they actually found an old pallet thrown to the side which was covered up with grass and just left there.
And how was she afterwards?
She was fine. She had no ill effects, thank God.
Thank God.
But she just saw her whole life, and if she was just... On her own, she would have been, she was gone.
Yeah.
And this other man, luckily, she sort of came up. Like, the manhole would be only about 2x2. That she came up in the right place, that he was searching around with his hand. She said, suddenly she just felt a hand just around her wrist, and he pulled her up.
Okay.
She got a desperate fright.
Another warning. Okay.
You know, but it's a warning around these places that you know where you really are.
Yeah.
She never suspected that there was a manhole out there, and the older man didn't know.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, Paul, what an incredible story. Well, just that image of your daughter in the slurry tank, not knowing which way was up, not knowing where the manhole was. She was so lucky.
She was so lucky.
Okay, Paul. Good to meet him. I'll get us Paul and Kildare. Now, you never know where Liveline is going to go. It was Dan, who was it? Dan Murphy mentioned Danny O'Neill of Michel. The name rings a bell with me because of Dan Oli, I think. Dan O'Neill. Danny O'Neill of Michel, good afternoon. Have you retired?
No, not yet.
You're still bone setting?
I do, yeah.
And where did the gift come from, Danny?
Well, it's in the family for generations.
Okay, and who will it go to after you, please God?
Well, I'll tell you now, we don't know that. My father couldn't do it.
Okay.
I was no kind of man used to do it. And he had one daughter, she was a nun. And everyone thought when anything happened to him, that was the end of it.
Okay.
And I was the only male already around the place. And it was about 3 weeks later, and I fell right up from Tullow one evening. He said the young was off the fall, something wrong with her arm.
Yeah, okay.
And I told him about another uncle aunt of mine. And he said, what about yourself?
All right.
She look at her for me anyhow. And well, I said, but you're wasting your time coming out. Because I had other doing trying, and I was walking out, so I wasn't a bit anxious to start.
Okay.
But I was a child that evening. I felt more on the wrist, and I said, I think that wrist is dislocated. He said, if it's easy, you put it back.
Okay.
I said, I won't, but when you're here now, I'll bring it to my aunt, the nearest place. He said, it's easy to do it, and go and do it, and note it down the name. You're the only one left now. He said, I won't leave you, try it.
Okay.
And I said, fair enough, you'll play a chance, I'll chance, but don't blame me, it goes wrong. So I caught the hand and gave it a twist and chicked back in.
Well done.
Now can't you do it?
And that's how Danny, sorry for going to cry, that's how Danny O'Neill realised you had the gift.
Yeah.
You had the gift. Okay, stay there because Celine is in Arklow. Celine, you contacted us about Danny O'Neill of Meishill as well. Why?
Yeah, absolutely. So, how are you, Joe? So I have been a patient of Neil and Meishill, as was my father, as was my sisters. And I was a little bit, at the time, when I lived in Dublin and I hadn't come back to Arklow, I had a really bad back and I'd be crippled with it. I wouldn't be able to move with it. And I came home one weekend and I was on the sofa. My mother says, come on, I'll bring you down to Neil and Meishill. And I didn't know what that was, or I didn't even know Meishill was a place or anything like that. So I said, okay. So I got in the car, lay across the back seat and went down. Now, it's a bizarre experience because when you go down there, it's an honour system. You go in and there could be animals there or there could be other people there.
Well, who was on the queue when you went down?
So there was a goal, there was a horse in front of me.
Yeah.
So I came out and told, well, actually, he'll go next and then you'll be in after that. And I went in and I was a bit like, oh, my God, where's my mother brought me? Now, I knew my father had gone there for years and my father swore by him. Now, this is from someone who's been to chiropractors and osteopaths, the whole shebang. So I went in and I was literally bent over and was told to stand against the wall, put my leg up, and next thing he did some manipulation and stood up dead straight and walked out, not a bother, not a pain, totally standing up straight, walked in, bent over, came out up straight, and only for I experienced it myself, I wouldn't have thought anybody could manipulate the bones and set them that well. But sure, I was grand. I walked out, not a bother, no painkillers, no nothing. And I was totally fixed. And it's funny, when my sister has a bad back, I say to her, do you want me to bring you down to Neil and Meishill?
Neil and Meishill. And Celine, was it painful?
Well, it was a bit of a jolt. It's pushing your bone back in, do you know what I mean? So I was obviously a disc came out or whatever had happened to me.
Danny, Danny's saying the gifts he says has been in the family for 400 years, you know, his grandfather and his uncle. And Maria Conlon, thanks, Elaine and Arklow. Maria Conlon, O'Neill of Meishill, he's on there now. He's a good age, he's 90, as he told us. And he's, but he's still, I don't know if he's still working as such. Maria,
yeah, hiya, Joe.
How are you doing?
Yeah, grand. My seventh dad, Lord Marshall, used to go down to his Annie years ago. His dad used to have broken toes and broken thumbs and whatever. And we go down to Meishill and you go into the yard and there could be about 40 or 50 cars in the yard first. And then you could have a horse at the end of the yard or a bull or a cow or whatever. And then he would be working on the animals first. And then he'd come up and work on humans then. And it wouldn't be bothering him. You know, he was a great man. He was a great man.
Okay. And people, you know, he was working.
Credit to his work and the credit to him as well.
And you say he was working on a cow at the other end of the yard.
Oh, yeah. Working on a cow, he'd get into the trailer or he'd be...
Do you remember the horse Danny O'Neill used? Well, he was called Danoli. Do you remember the horse? Danny owned.
Danoli, yes.
Yeah, that was famous. What do they call him? The people's champion in the 1990s.
The people's champion. That's
okay,
right,
and how are you doing now, Maria? How is your body now? Are you okay?
Oh, I'm great. It was dad that he used to do work on, not me. It was
your dad. Okay. Yeah. Mind yourself. Thanks to you, Maria. Thanks, Elaine. Thanks, Danny O'Neill of Meishill. Back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at RTE.ie. Tom Leonard, back to the farm accidents.
Yes, how is things, Joe?
Good, how are things with you, Tom?
Not too bad at all now. As the man says, I'm putting up mileage in the clock, but I'm okay.
Okay, the clock is still running.
The clock is still running,
good
though.
Good man. Now, Tom, the bull.
I was listening there to one of your listeners there about a bull.
Yeah.
And I'd say that he's right about they're a very dangerous animal. But I was working down near the burn with an old Hi-Mac.
Okay.
If you remember the old Hi-Mac.
Yeah, the big diggers, yeah?
Yeah, the big diggers. And I was digging out bog. And in the burn, you'd have, we'll say, 10 or 12 feet of bog. but you'd be very near a rock as well.
Okay.
You know, you'd only be.
Oh,
you'd
of
only
course,
be
yeah.
You'd only be. It's very strange sort of ground, but as I say, anyway, I was walking, hitting out for the car, hitting for home, and and the next thing, this freezing bull, he started pawing the ground and started snorting at me.
Wow.
And I said, I've no chance now hitting, running along the hard ground because if I slip and fall on the rocks because it had been dozed. And I said, I've no chance that way. So I said, I hit back for the bog because I said, as soon as he'll come into the bog, he'll start to sink.
With the weight of him, yeah.
With the weight of him.
Okay.
But anyway, he didn't sink that much. He was plunging through it and I got to reach the Hymek.
Okay.
And I started the Hymek anyway, and I played hide-and-go-seek with the arm of the digger. He came for the digger, the bucket of the digger, a good few times.
Holy God.
I filled buckets of bog, and I threw them down, he said. And I said, this time now, I kept this hide-and-go-seek now for at least 15 or 20 minutes with him.
Wow.
And this time, I said, I'm going to give him a little headbutt with the bucket of the digger.
Yes.
So I struck him one crack at the bucket of the digger into the head.
Yes.
And I knocked him back in his arse. And I got down at the digger and I looked at him. And he shook his head and he walked away from me.
Is this a true story now? This is a true story.
That's a true story. And I got a chance to make it out into the road.
But Tom, you're running across the field with the rocks and that. And
yeah, it was just
did you know, how close did he get to you?
Oh, Jesus, I'll tell you, if I slipped and fell, he was then about 10 metres of me at one stage.
So you jumped up on the Hymek has tracks. Did that have tracks or wheels?
Oh, Jesus, I jumped up on the tracks and I had the window open and I didn't take time to open the door. I jumped in the window of it and I grabbed one of the levers and he was poking it and he was rooting and he was putting scraws flying with his...
Yeah, but surely he'd no hope of getting at you when you were in a Hymek.
Oh, no, but he was still trying it. Like.
Still trying, okay. So then you're using the elephant's trunk, the bucket.
The bucket.
And you're...
The long arm. The long arm.
So he's going for that.
He's going for that then.
Non-stop.
Oh, no. Non-stop. Tried to knock it down. I suppose he was trying to get into me.
Would he just that you're probably one of the few people who've seen a bull for so long attacking something, because if they attack a human, you won't last long. But does he when he goes at the bucket with his head, the bull? Did he then and he couldn't get anywhere? Does he revert? Does he go backwards and come again, or does he just?
Oh yeah, he goes back. He goes into reverse and he puts up, goes back into first gear again, and he tries it again.
And what were
he
you?
He goes into four-wheel drive again, I'll call it.
And was it when you were in the Hymek? Remember, listeners, Hymek is a tracked digger, massive tracked digger.
Yeah, massive.
You see on a building site.
Between 10 and 11 tons weight.
And he was rocking the digger.
He was fighting with the arm. He was fighting with the arm. I was pushing him back with the arm.
And then you put, what you do, you picked up some dirt you filled the bucket.
I filled the bucket and I threw it down on top of his head.
And the bull laughed.
And no, he didn't. He didn't back off at that stage. I had to give him a tip of the bucket then. I had to hit him a belt of the bucket. Do you know, I had to make him feel.
But did he buckle when you hit the bull with the belt of the bucket?
Yeah, he backed off then.
Wow.
Because I did hurt him, like.
Was he okay? God, we'll have the animal rights people on. Was he okay afterwards, Tom?
Oh, Jesus, he was fine. I seen him every day after that, but he didn't come next or near me.
Thank God.
No.
And why, do you know why he came after you? You know the whole, you were wearing red, or the Hymek was red, or...
Jesus, I don't know. I think this time of the year, if a bull hasn't enough of work, we'll say bull and cows.
Yeah. Yes.
I think that's what irritates them.
Okay.
You know.
He's gagging for something.
Yeah, he is. He's gagging for something.
Yeah.
And it's the same with a sire or anything else, like that they're gagging for something.
Yeah.
But
Tom,
like, I'd be winching machines out of bog holes as well for people. Where are you, Offaly, are you? Are you an Offaly man?
No, I'm Dublin man. No, Ballyfermot.
Oh, you're Dublin.
No, I was.
I know.
The,
well,
no, I thought when I saw we knew nothing about farming. One of the, if we saw six bottles of milk in a field, we think it was a cow's nest. You know what I mean? We didn't know. Yeah. We didn't know where it came from. But Tom, are you still farming?
Well, you must have known White's Garage off the Long Mile in Dublin.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Declan White and yeah. Patrick, they were seat agents. Yeah. But they had a farm beside me. And like, okay. I mean...
And are you still farming?
I'm helping on the farm. Like, I'm 72 now. Oh, I'm helping on the farm.
It's a good age. And what type of farm is it, do you want to tell me?
Well, it is Mountain Farm. Ah. If you remember where there was a landslide in the Slievachty Mountains.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Where there was 70 wind turbines and there was a landslide. Right. So I'm in the city centre of the Slievachty Mountains in a place called Slievenor.
Okay, and what are you farming? Is it cattle or tillage?
It's mixed farming. To be mixed farming, it would be suckling herd.
By the way, did you ever get... The bulls have names, don't they? For when the...
I didn't... Well, he was a Friesian bull, that's all I can tell you, but I was working for a Michael O'Connor at the time, but
I'm wondering, did he ever have... He must have had more calves.
Oh, well, sure, I suppose...
He fathered many a calf, by the sounds of him.
Oh, God, he did. He did, for sure. Certainly, he did.
Okay, an incredible story, Tom.
I'd say bulls, but machinery. I had accidents with machinery as well, but thank God I'm alive to tell you.
What happened with the machinery?
Well, sure, down in that Dublin men's farm, I was pulling out Christmas trees and I was going along a ledge and the tractor overturned and I was lucky. I was inside under it, but I pulled the stopper and I was lucky, thank God, I got out from under it.
What's the stopper?
The stopper to stop the tractor.
Oh, sorry, okay. But you had a safety cab.
I had a safety cab, but I was on a force and major one time and there was no roll bar, there was nothing in it. And the steering, when you're driving along the road, the steering used to go into something like a jiving dance, I'll call it.
Okay, all over the place.
All over the place. And I didn't realise that there was one of the track rod-ins worn.
Okay.
So I was off lucky when it turned over. I jumped off at the right side. When the steering, I was going down a steep hill.
I know what
and,
you mean, yeah.
She got into a dance and I couldn't control it. And
where did the tractor in the Fordson Major, which didn't have a safety cab, where did that end up?
It wound up, funny enough, on the side of a ditch. It turned over onto the side of a ditch. So I was lucky to jump on the right side, you know.
And what else happened to you?
What else happened to the tractor?
No, you.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of things happened to me. I was helping an old farmer one time. He was dosing a horse in a cattle crush and she fell down and I was trying to relieve her, but she didn't kick me, but she was pushing back trying to get up and she broke my ankle.
Kicked you. Okay.
Yeah, her leg slid back along the crush. Okay. And I had the two ankles broke. I was helping another man another morning taking a ram off a digger and I said to him, we'd want to tie that now, I said, because...
A ram,
heavy ram off a Hitachi.
Yeah. Oh, I know what you mean. The ram is it's not the animal, it's
the top ram that
you put on a Hi-Mac or whatever. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
On a Hitachi this way.
Hitachi, okay, that's the brand.
And we stretched it out on a pile of timber that was harvested in the forestry and I said to him, we'd want to tie that now to the jib letting it down and he said, no, he was a strong young fella, but he slipped and he had fallen down in my ankle.
Oh, Tom.
And then, as I say, I was awful lucky, sure, good for things like that. I'd just be winching people out of bog holes as well. They had been buried, machines buried, and a rope flew one time and stuck me in the side of the head.
Very dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Work, awful dangerous work. But I got...
And when the rope whiplashed and whacked you on the side of the head, what did you think had happened?
I'll tell you. I thought I got a box from Sonny Liston or Muhammad Ali.
It took you down.
It stunned me and sort of knocked me out.
Well, aren't you lucky it wasn't a metal cable that snapped?
Well, I'll tell you, I was lucky at the time that it was only like a beaded rope. There was metal inside in the middle of it, but like I didn't get the right whack.
Okay.
I suppose. But Tom, it was enough to damage my eye anyway.
Tom, will you? Where are you now? Are you at home?
No, I'm picking up a young lady from school. You can nearly hear her blowing a tin whistle. she's blowing a whistle here now.
And who's that?
That's a little lady called Ruby.
And is Ruby your... What a gorgeous name. Is Ruby...
She's my niece. Oh. A little redhead.
And that's her. What's she playing?
She's playing nothing, but sure you can hear her blowing it anyway, nearly. Can you hear her? Blow that whistle. Blow that whistle. Jesus, I tell you one thing. You'd want paracetamol if he was driving her home.
No, she's a good talker, is she, Tom?
Oh, sure, yeah, she talked in accident. Her grandmother was good, but she's twice as good as us.
I wonder where she got that from. Okay, Tom, will you mind yourself, will you? Going home.
And mind
beautiful Ruby as well. Well done, Tom Leonard.
And
Ruby
on
musical accompaniment.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.